Now, let me check in. Is this being meaningful?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I'm just going to... Chris?
I was also looking at how there isn't anything about facilitation that I'm already not doing in other parts of my life. So one little simple example was this morning, I'm trying to manage the blanket, so nights are mostly like blanket management. I've redesigned the bed like several times. I'm kind of doing it this morning and just kind of enjoying it and seeing what I have there, you know, and kind of looking at this blanket. And then an idea comes in. And it's like, well, you could fold this one in half and it could go, you know, and it's like, okay. And so it seems to me like that's all we're doing is just being that available in that way, you know, and I could notice it really plainly in moments when conditioning's not there. I mean, that there's probably 95% of the day, life is leading me, but the other 5% is where the attention goes. So if I get up to do my dishes, the number of decisions that are being made by life is truly incredible. You know, which foot you're going to, you know, walk first on.
Yeah.
And there's the spatula, there's the plate, and are you going to, you know, and it's just like it all is kind of happening magically. You know, if I'm telling a little story here, life is still kind of doing the dishes and all that kind of stuff. But, it, you know, so it's just a matter of, like we're saying, just getting rid of the commentary on the side, and it's all there.
Yeah. Well, there are two things that about that. One is a study that has been done that most Americans think that the world is in terrible shape even though their lives are fine. Most Americans believe that the world is an incredibly dangerous place even though nothing is happening to them.
Same kind of thing, yeah.
It's exactly the same
yep.
thing. Yeah. That because media, entertainment, all of that is focused on the 5% that's wrong, leading people to believe that that's 95% of reality, even though it doesn't fit at all with what's going on with them.
Yep.
Yeah. That's very good. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So much coming up as people are sharing, but one thing is just how lucky we are that. You know, we're being asked to grow up, but it's to grow up together. You know, it takes so much courage individually, each of us, to step forward, to show up. But the gift of this practice that we're doing at holding hands with Sonia, it's phenomenal that it's set up that way, and that it requires, you know, both the showing up and being courageous and the holding hands with Sonia, both are requirements.
Yes.
In order to grow up, can't
yes.
actually do it alone. You know,
yes.
that we're in this lesson.
Yeah.
It's just really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, for me, it's been really just powerful to be back here right now, especially on this retreat around facilitation. I think that we have to do this regularly, the way we're talking about, because it is a place where, you know, I can see sometimes, basically I've been looking at how I got here this week and I was surprised by the amount of energy, you know, the first time that I step forward to just do reflecting. I watched all this energy come up as other people described. I think I turned feet red the way I would have at like age 5 or my first year at the monastery. And you know, it just struck me how much energy there was. And I was looking at how it just points to that when I'm out there sort of doing this on my own, I think there still must be some sense of almost, I'm going to say unnecessary pressure. It's a major responsibility representing practice, but I think there's a little extra pressure that's actually a projection that I'm doing unconsciously of, am I, you know, like...
creating an opening for conditioning to come in and find out how you're not doing a good job.
Kind of, because I'm not doing it with the team.
Mm-hmm.
So, what was the, you know... So just coming together and sort of holding hands
mm-hmm.
right now, and it just feels incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I also just want to say that I think I'm seeing a little something around, I think there's a part of me who actually has been getting some juice from the amount of sphere, as I said, this recent sphere blast that's been happening. And I think there's a little part of me that, that gets some juice from it, in the sense of a process where there's a lot of fear and then I can blast through it, kind of. But I think I'm just getting a much kinder approach to fear right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I think I went up a little.
Because kindness really supports the system and fear is really consuming the system.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, the physical system, not the current system.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And lastly, just I think I project that this fear that's been coming up lately is not so much about being asked, it's not about any of the content, like that these are bigger things than I've done, but it's about just acknowledging that I'm in more of a place of connection and okayness somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's triggered the sort of the stop it energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so with the, what both the two of you, Kristen, every moment in life is a big moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that conditioning names some of them as big and some of them as not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. the more aware we become, the more aware we are of possibility, of connection, of mm-hmm. all of those kinds of things. And so also the more aware we are of conditioning, wanting to come in and stop that expansiveness.
Yeah.
But nothing has really changed. It's just mm-hmm. our ability to be present to what has always been the case.
Mm-hmm.
Just terribly cosmic.
Mm-hmm. I was really, I've been appreciating the analogy that was made a couple of days ago about the log, you know, that it's easy mm-hmm. to walk across the log mm-hmm. that's on the ground and then all of a sudden it's up a ways. And, mm-hmm. and I just really see a lot in that because it's like, okay, I'm really comfortable walking across this log, and now it feels like, you know, the bar has been raised a bit, and, you know, conditioning, you want to say, okay, I can do that. Mm-hmm. That's too scary. But then there is that other thing that was pointed at, is, oh boy, mm-hmm. you know, let's take this one on. And the thing that I've seen is, you know, all the logs only been raised one more notch. It's not like we're being asked to go up five notches. You know, and
we haven't signed you up for that facilitation show on PBS.
not beyond where we're capable of stepping up, and we're given an opportunity to practice, essentially in this group with a mat underneath it, so when we fall off, we won't hurt ourselves. You know, and we're also not being asked to go so far that when we're out there without the mat, even if we fell off, we would hurt ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels like such an appropriate analogy for my experience of going back and forth between the fear and the excitement,
mm-hmm.
and just also recognizing that the other thing I've seen about it is that then, you know, once we get good at whatever level of log walking we're doing, then it gets so easy we've lost sight of how far we've come. You know, we forget, oh, hi, I'm actually on the third log up, but it's just home now, so I forgot that I got there from 2 and 1. And, you know, so it's, I've just gotten a lot of mileage out of that analogy.
Yeah, and it creates, I think that's what you're saying with that last part, creates a lot of sympathy and compassion for people who, you know, are a little nervous walking on the ground, forget to get on a walk. And,
This is all step up on the stage, and I'm grateful to be here. And I've been looking at the growing up thing, too. I think you started off this retreat saying I'm sort of happy that we were here because we were growing up. And just kind of taking that in, like, you know, we are. In some way, but the new practice direction feels like it also is asking us to be grown-ups. You know, it's because I can see there's a way for me where there can be you know, I'll kind of suffer and fall apart for a while until that next retreat, and then that will kind of keep me afloat, and then I'll, but now it's kind of like, you know, you guys are saying, you need to help with everybody who can, you know, pull it together as much as possible to grab an oar, and yeah. I can't be, you know, waiting for somebody to pick me up with a life preserver anymore, you know, I need to, yeah, I have to want to be part of it. Which is so exciting. And it's what you always point to, too, that, you know, every moment of life is not promised. It's not like, you know, maybe later, a couple of years from now, when I feel like it, I'll try a little harder to practice. It's like, we need to do this right now. And so this is another opportunity to get to see that. And with what Deb said, I've just been watching how I need to not let conditions get a hold of that, too, that it's, we need to grow up, and we need to grow up together. Because it can also be, you know, get over it, you can't reach out for...
Right, you should do this to yourself.
Exactly.
You need to be a grown-up, and it's all up to you, and they don't want to hear from you. Don't be a little kid, just...
Exactly.
That's a pretty serious place of all.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah. Definitely. So just to see that there need to be both things happening, how important that is. And so I watch it, you know, I have all the separation and karma and everything, of course, too, and, you know, that goes on. And the not sharing in group part still is just a place that I watch. And this week, like, usually at this point in a retreat, I still been pretty quiet, and I would have been crying in my room most of the time because I felt so awful and I was such a bad person, and I've seen how that come up, and I've been able to not indulge that. And there's still a place where it kind of is like the conversation yesterday about mentoring versus enabling. Like, yeah, it's great. I'm really happy that I'm working to mentor myself about, okay, I've been a little more quiet than maybe one part of me wants to be. But also, there's somebody who really wants to participate even more, and I need to also stand up for that person, too.
And so one of the things that, you know, if somebody is feeling bad, so there's a little person who feels bad. She wants to go to her room and cry. What you can say, if you want to mentor her, is, oh, let's go outside and go for a walk and talk about it. Okay? And what you can say to Karma is, you have been ruining lives since before the beginning of beginningless time. Enough. Enough. There are people here who want to live, who want to participate, who want to play, who want to be involved, who want to make a difference. It's time for them to have their chance. You've had your chance. And we can all feel that, I hope. You know, Karma has had plenty of chances to ruin lives.
I wanted to say a little bit about the experience I've had of being in the role of facilitator in a little group. Because I told myself earlier today, if there's an opportunity, I'm going to do it, to practice. So I spent a lot of the morning really reassuring myself and just practicing on myself, like going for a walk. And I think that was it really helped. And I promised myself that I would not allow myself to be beaten up afterwards. And it seemed like I wasn't a star facilitator. And some of the things I worry about happening actually happened.
Of course, right? Because it's a relatively new skill in the scheme of things.
Yeah. Well, there were several good things about that. One is that I lived through it. And the people I facilitated
seemed fine.
Yeah, they don't seem terribly disappointed or angry or, you know,
no one's bandaged today. Well, Michael maybe, but he was yesterday.
So that, you know, it was really good to have things, you know, that I wasn't to his present. You know, I didn't even handle things as well as I would have liked. And, you know, and it was fine. Mm-hmm.
There's a good practice opportunity.
And then I think the fact that I worked so hard reassuring myself and facilitating myself in the morning that I was actually able to see, and I had told myself, okay, we're not even practicing facilitation, we're just going to practice awareness. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to see what happens. See what happens if this happens, see what happens if that happens. And I was able to see
that one. Yeah.
Yes, it does. It's fine to come. You're not going to remember. You're not going to remember all the words. You're not going to be present. Okay, I'm going to be present. I'm going to be present. And then they start talking like, oh my God, I'm losing it. I had the first few words and now I've lost the rest. And then this whole stuff starts, I'll see, you can't do it. And, but if I was beating myself up, I usually can't see.
What you've articulated is the whole body practice.
See,
I'm going to see what happens. I'm going to see how it all happens. I'm going to watch and I'm going to see how it all happens. Mm-hmm. And no meetings afterwards?
No. I mean, it's like, it's just remember, we're just going to be aware. Remember, I just had to keep saying that. Remember, no meetings. We just remember. And again, I think we'll go on.
Yes.
You're going to do that for us.
Yeah. Which, again, is what we're doing in practice.
And I said, gosh, that was great. You showed up, you did it, you opened your mouth.
You didn't faint.
Yes. You know, and I tried to just, you know, come in with lots of...
Yeah. Which is the point. May you never not do that. Mm-hmm. You know, what happens to us is we go, okay, but the emergency is over now. Mm-hmm. So I can just turn my life back over to conditioning to do whatever it does until the next time that I'm called upon to show up. But what you, I hope, got out of that is that's the way to live your whole life. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be aware. I'm just going to see what happens. That's all. Remember, all we're doing is being aware and seeing what happens. No beatings. Remember, all we're doing is being, you know, if you repeated that, it just, like that, for years, you would have a very, very, very happy life. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Well, I want to put something out that's been kind of tripping me up that I really appreciate this. Is that I really realize that it's a part of the boring story, that there's a piece that still gets me. And it's around what I'm trying to do with my whole livelihood and offering spirit works and politics and all this. And that it's grown out of this practice. But what conditioning is telling me is that it's separate in the sense that that I'm kind of ripping off what the practice is and now I'm trying to go off on my own. And
you know what?
What?
The good news? You want the good news?
Yeah.
It won't work.
What won't work?
You can't rip off the practice and go off on your own.
Please tell me how I can't do that.
You can't. It won't work. It's not like you can't do it. It just won't work. There will never, for instance, not that I'm saying this, I'm just giving you another example.
Okay.
There will never be an enlightened ego.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So
there won't be. There can be big egos with content of enlightenment. Mm-hmm. That's not the same thing as an enlightened ego. So people will worry about people using a practice to feed their ego and that sort of thing, but it won't work. Mm-hmm. So it's great.
There's an innate mechanism that just is toxic. Okay, what it's saying is that that's what you're trying to do.
Well, that's great. If that's what you're trying to do, and you don't know it, which is the case, right? If you are trying to do that. You can't actually say you're trying to do that because you would have to be doing it volitionally to be trying to do it, which you're not. So if you are doing that and you don't know it, it won't work, and you'll find out. Now, at the risk of doing what we never do, which is referring back to something that was said in group, okay, you had an awareness that something didn't work because you were choosing conditioning. Mm-hmm. Remember saying that?
I really appreciated you telling me what it is.
Well, you were in group and you were talking about relationship.
Yeah, Sunday.
And that you could see that the relationship didn't work because you chose conditioning.
Yeah.
And that it was a very, very, very painful thing to see.
Yeah.
You couldn't see it when it was happening.
Yeah.
When you got it, it was too late in that sense. And yet, you got it in a really compelling way that gave you a lesson that you will never forget for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. That's what life is offering us all the time. I mean, that's how we're all going to make our way through this. Mm-hmm. We're going to do stuff that we don't know we're doing. We're going to see it. We're going to wish we had been able to see it sooner. Okay? But we couldn't. If we could have, we would have. And we just have to go, okay, well, so you all heard me say, you know, when you're lying there next to that 12 by 12 board that has just slammed you in the head and knocked you flat, the first thing conditioning wants to say is, it didn't need to be that big a board. Okay? But when you think back, when you repent, when you sit quietly, you will realize that first came the 2x4. I won't bore you with all the numbers. And finally, it was the 12x12 that took you down and got your attention. Okay? And we all want to say unfair, wrong, I could have, I would have, if only somebody had told me. And then you go, well, actually, they did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But if that's what it took, and as soon as we get it, all we can be is grateful.
Yeah.
So if that's what's going on, you will know.
Okay.
But you won't know because conditioning is telling you.
So if I've been hit by a 2x4 and it just hasn't stopped me, then I just
got to
be willing
to
4x4.
Oh, it's not even willing. You'll just go along. And suddenly, boom, it'll hit you.
And you won't tell me if I've been hit by 2x4 and 15?
Well, I tell people all the time. I mean, I'm a non-stop tell people machine. But, you know, people only hear what they hear and get what they get. The best that can happen is when we get hit like that, you know, because for most of you, I'm the person, right? So you might say, huh, I think that's what Sherry was talking about. Okay? Or you might say, I read that somewhere and that's what the Buddha said.
Yeah.
Or in your case, I think that's what Jesus meant by that. But it's not, it'll never be new information. It's never new information.
I'm sorry, there's just this, so there's this box of brochures sitting on my table to be mailed out that I paid extra to have it rest here, and then it's been sitting there for 3 weeks because I can't, you know.
Okay, now, here's the thing that I'll tell you now. Bad decisions are the specialty of conditioning. And there are some ways that we can tell when we're making bad decisions. Urgency is one of them. Life is never urgent. So I can give you that little hint right there. you're getting set up. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't send them out.
That's where I was going with that.
Now, of course. See, don't tiptoe. Because what condition wants us to do is tiptoe along looking for boys. Now, I didn't say when that 12 by 12 gets you, you're dead. It just caught your attention in a way that your attention needed to be caught. Mm-hmm. Trusting ego to keep you safe is a fast way to miss life.
So they're beating me up for having him sitting there for the last 3 weeks is really not necessarily that. I mean, it's not that they beat me, but it's the fact that they've been sitting there.
No, what you want to do is catch the urgency.
Yeah.
Now, the bottom line in this, does anybody know the bottom line? Drop the conversation. Mm-hmm. Get out of conversation with conditioned mind. You will only ever, always, doesn't that sound like that? Only ever, always, get bad information if you're in a conversation with conditioned mind. Life only has access to us in silence. The gaps between the thoughts, between the words, that's the only access it has to us. All that stuff is meant to keep life and its wisdom away from us. So that's good. That is the first giant act of commitment, is to drop that conversation. Because that's not ever what you want to guide you. It will never, ever give you any information you need. People, it's huge. Making a commitment to drop that conversation is huge. Growing the faith that anything you need to know will be given to you is huge. It's everything. It's the bottom line of every religious or spiritual path.
Well, I just want to thank you for me, my experience yesterday, if you were saying, stand up, you know, drop it. Just drop it. And just said thank you and the monks for caring enough for just putting it right where it is, saying it, not beating around, but just because sometimes when we're up against this, which seems like that life and death, that's all that's going to do it. Just look, drop it. And I had that experience after being facilitated, and then my experience in facilitating, like the difficulty, the challenge with it, it was like, there's no choice. Yeah. And I dropped the conversation. And it's not that that's not going to come back. I know that. I mean,
but what will also come back is your ability to drop it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, and that's what's fascinating about it, is over the last year, that ability has grown and grown. And I know that conditioning is coming in headstrong because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and yet still.
Just as Marie started this out, you know, your commitment to drop it gets bigger. Conditioning gets bigger.
Well, what everybody has talked about.
However, that's all right. But I just have to finish that point, because otherwise this doesn't seem like a good future. But it only has so much in its arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And then this, of course, is infinite.
Mm-hmm. Well, my sense of it is that I'm getting this is a fever talking, but my sense is that I'm getting closer to that because the stakes are so high.
Yes.
The stakes are so high that I've never been hit continuously this hard.
Yes.
And that's what keeps me going.
Yes, yes. And this is the point at which you say, now, you'll have to find your own moment, okay? But this is it. Bring it on. Mm-hmm. Bring it on.
Right.
Give me your worst, okay? I can't imagine it can get any worse, but go ahead, try, I'm ready.
Well, I started to have peaks of that. Mm-hmm. And then I think, that's why. That's it. Mm-hmm. Those peaks allow me to see, that's it. Because in a sense, I'm inviting it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm inviting it consciously at times, but just through my decision, just to stand up. And I just have to say that what gives me the, I don't know, courage is quite, it is courage, but it's more than that. The ability to keep standing up when I'm flat, to give it, is the model that this place is, that you are, that the monks are. Because I, when I have a lucid moment, I mean, on the ground, perhaps, and, you know, I can just, no, I think the monks in turn might have had something covered in this.
Yeah,
it just puts.
Or are, at least I'm not the only one who's ever had this experience.
Yeah, and
yeah, I'm not alone in this. It's
yeah, and it just is terrifically, well, the whole song, it's just terrifically helpful. And thank you for pushing us. And that isn't even the right word, whatever the word is, to keep standing up. Because we can't do it alone. No one can do it alone.
No one can do it alone.
And that's the gift, and we get to get clear and clear about that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Phil,
pass you by.
It's a perfect opportunity. So, I just want to express my gratitude. This has been a marvelous retreat because of the whole...
It's not over, is it?
No.
We're really miserable stuff has yet to come. Enjoy this.
The whole thing in the beginning about it being a retreat within a retreat is like a double retreat. And that's kind of, and as I'm experiencing it on a lot of different levels. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm just for the record, I'm hearing all those voices too, you know, and it's like, you know, where are these coming from? And the thing is, what I noticed about it is that they're like, for me anyhow, a smoke screen. So that if I entertain them at all, which I have very little willingness to do, they are keep me from looking at not at their process, at a process that conditioning is doing. And so, okay, now last night I was looking to see what is this a process that they might be keeping me from seeing, because somehow I just got this kind of feeling that that's what was going on. And what I saw was that conditioning can come in kind of a back door or a sneaky way, and we talk about it, it becomes skin. Mm-hmm. And basically, what I saw is that the skin, in a way, is a cover-up for what conditioning is doing. Like, say, conditioning says, you know, something like, well, you can't talk right, you know, you forget the words and all this stuff. And so then to you know, instead of, say, moving to center or whatever, you know, doing what we do with that, because it might be even subliminal, you know, sometimes, because, oh yeah, I've heard all that, so I, you know, but then it might sneak it in. And then, so what it will build is this kind of, you know how things get tough
Yeah.
So it builds kind of a layer of skin.
In other words, the skin, as you're describing it, would be a pseudo-center.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it kind of builds, well, and it builds that, you know. And so there there I am thinking, you know, everything's cool. And it may not be. And so that's when the 2x4s are very helpful. I have experienced all my in practice life. What I saw is that, so then a lot of times just these other voices, I mean, it's like we'll say, oh, that's conditioning, and then self-hate will come in and kind of like a partner to it and try to just keep us distracted from the whole process that it's doing.
Which, if I may, is a great argument for dropping the conversation.
Exactly.
Because as you're describing, having that same conversation over and over and over is a really effective way mm-hmm. of keeping a person stuck in a certain
yeah.
spot.
Because they're not to entertain the voices. And just being here somehow and with everything that has been going on has allowed me to look into the other spots, you know. And so what I could see is that the process, like, is the same for everything. I mean, it could be as simple as I'm driving my car. I feel safe in the car because I'm a good driver. I mean, that's a whole setup for conditioning. You know, I have this other thing I drive that I don't feel safe in because I have no structure around years of feeling safe on my head, you know. But the car we have is years of illusion that we can go around thinking, oh yeah, I'm safe here, you know, I'm a driver, you know, I can drive. But that, we can layer that just about on anything. And that's why the believe nothing is, you know, that's, I was thinking that last night too. You know, that's Jesus. Now, I don't believe anything. But when you really get down to believing nothing, it means any of that, all of that, you know, just nothing. And so anyhow, it was just such a helpful awareness because, you know, I could just see, you know, what conditioning, you know, how it can lead my life sometimes without me even knowing it.
Exactly. Right now. Yes, that there's nothing triggering that moment of
right.
Which means we really have to find a more subtle place. And that tendency, the conditioning to want to cruise, mm-hmm. you know, to want to get to a place that's comfortable, mm-hmm. that you're in your car, you're driving, you're behind the wheel, you know how to do this. To get to that comfortable place, you know, practice always encourages us to then find the next level of discomfort. Mm-hmm. Not because we're masochistic, but because what we're attempting to do is let go as much karma as possible. And so if we can manage to keep our lives in that really easy, smooth, comfortable place, kind of waiting, you know, people are going to get sick and die and, you know, the stock market will crash and then the entire world economy and things like that. But within that, you know, we're cruising along. And what we want to begin to take on for ourselves is a desire to, okay, what's next? What's next? What's available to me to work on now?
Yeah, and what I found was is helpful is I just put a topic, you know, on a piece of paper and just wrote what if, you know, that's committed this way. If I were to believe anything, what is it I would believe? Of course, it's what I would believe. And that's the skin of that particular place, you mm-hmm. know, and it's like, I could do it with just about any topic, you know, plug in the topic, and so if I'm not...
And then, the interesting thing would be to write down the opposites to all of those.
Mm-hmm. Right, because that's where it would go,
Yes. That would open up the next, the next piece.
Right.
Yeah. Because I'm also as devoted to those.
Exactly.
That's where it meets. Yeah. Yay.
I, too, have been just pummeled this whole retreat, and it seems like every time I try to screw up my courage to say something, or maybe it's to it, and then so somebody says, well, she just said it, you can't say the same thing. And I had last night a dark night of the soul, where I was just being just hammered with, that I'm going to have to leave the practice, that, that the shameful secret of my deficient practice is coming to light, and blah, 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 blah. This morning, when I looked at it, I saw, as I've seen before, but and really, 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 really clearly, that the appropriate response to all this stuff about not practicing is to drop it and practice.
So clear as daylight.
And so clear until. Until I hear that we're now going to, you know, facilitate difficult people. I haven't even had a chance to do more than a couple reflective listenings here. And yeah, and then it all starts coming back up again.
Yeah. So just to underline what you your basic understanding for all of us is that if you feel your practice is not what it should be, drop that and practice. If there's something that you think somewhere you could probably be in practice that you're not, drop that and practice. If the voices are beating you for the lack of, what is your deficient?
The shameful secret of the
deficient. Drop that and practice. I mean, that's the whole deal.
Knowing that and doing that as it's happening.
Well, don't worry about doing it as it's happening. Do it whenever it occurs to you. But one of the things that is helpful, of course, at least in my world, is make a big sign. You know, what am I doing instead of dropping it and practicing? If that's, you know, whatever language there is that speaks to you about that, that's the sign that you put up. And then, because... Well, now that happened 5 days ago, and I've been lost. Yeah, drop it and practice. Because, you know, there are two things about it. One, you know, just the interesting nighttime thing. Why darkness, night, all the spooky, creepy, weird stuff, you know, that human beings have about night. And we can see, you know, who lives in the dark. We all experience that. But the idea of using everything that takes you away from practice to bring you back to practice is a really good one. Any kind of habitual sentence that goes through, let that trigger you to drop that and come back here. Whatever is used against you, let it turn it into something that you use for you. Is there more?
Well, yeah, there's more of that, so I'll let go.
Yeah, you're going to drop that.
Oh, just a couple things. I've been in the morning and in the evening reading the Way of Transformation. It's in that little booklet in the Hermitage. And I was remembering the first time I read that, and I thought, oh, this is so overdramatic. And so out there, and now I'm just like, all right. And the thing I keep, the sentence that I keep coming up, that won't quote it exactly, but it's basically we have to keep going through zones of annihilation in order to discover what is indestructible in us. And it feels like that's what we're talking about.
Yes.
Every, those steps we're asked to take are stepping into a zone of annihilation, but what's getting annihilated is conditioning. Mm-hmm. It's not us.
Yeah.
And it's not overdramatic to say that. I mean, we really are being invited to let something die.
Yes.
That is killing us. So yes. It dies first.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Your point is the essential one. Only one's going to live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I just have been really appreciating a reading that used to be really repellent to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and the move away from an identification with ego that is revealed in that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because ego would definitely find that
right.
Something you should never read again.
Right. Well, I think one of the moments is saying, yeah, there's that. You know, it's like those accomplishments you're talking about. It's like, oh yeah, I'm really in a different place than I was when I first read this.
Okay.
The other thing I just feel moved to say is, I felt this last night going home, I feel all the time, I am just, it's breathtaking to me how fabulous this song is.
Yes.
I just feel so unbelievably privileged to be here and to be sharing this experience with this group of people. I just can't imagine if I had, you know, well,
what did I do right?
and what's interesting to me about it is it's Sangha. I mean, it's not that it's personal. Mm-hmm. It's that it's what happens when Sangha is invited to do Sangha.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the best.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
And it makes things like facing that sort of annihilation possible.
Yes.
Because we're not doing it alone.
Well, and desirable. Because we see what it is in people. I mean, that's what's revealed here. The indestructible is what we're witnessing here.
Yeah.
Now, each person has a heck of a time seeing it in themselves, but we can all see it in everybody in the room. And so that's what inspires us to know who we really are and what we're going for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tracy? It's funny, I feel some urgency about this question, and so I'm wondering where this question's coming from, so I just want to start
there. Yeah, when we're like,
yeah.
Let us know. We might want to migrate back here a little and check it out, but
this is an important question. And it's a long facilitation, and when you were facilitating Rebecca, it was just a great modeling of how you kept just turning it back to her. And the one place where you said, you know, I'm bringing something up in group, which you should never do, but I'm doing something that I should never do, is you brought her back to a process that she had witnessed before. And that's what I want, my question is, because I have found I don't have a formal sitting group, but I have three friends that I've done the Mary's Number One retreat. And we have reminded each other of things that we said, you know, like a long time ago, is there some familiarity with that process? And it felt really helpful. And then when you said this is something that you should never do in group, I'm just wanting to know what the guidelines are there.
Never do it.
Okay.
That's always my encouragement. Now, if you are with a group of friends, mm-hmm. and that's the agreement that you have,
yeah.
that you can do that with one another, then mm-hmm. it's great. You might run into trouble at some point because somebody's identified with something, you come in with some helpful reminder about another time that they've, mm-hmm. and you run smack into their ego resistance and defenses, and it can take a toll on the friendship. But if you do this, now this is one thing I would strongly encourage, that you do it in a formal setting. It's not just, running to each other in the grocery store, how are you, blah, blah, blah. Well, remember the time when you said that, because the formal setting is a little bit of guarantee that the right people are showing up.
Yeah.
It's not 100%, but
there's
a hope.
Yeah.
And so people know that they've agreed to come together for a certain thing, and what the ground rules are, and they feel safe. And there's, even though it's not the same privileged environment that we talk about here, it is, in a sense, a privileged environment because it's what the four of you have agreed upon.
Yeah, that makes
yourselves.
Yeah.
But never,
never in the facilitation do you ever refer to anything that anybody has ever said to you.
Very, very, very dangerous.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you know why?
I do know why.
Yeah.
And how I know why is, one, when you're in that privileged environment, you want them to just feel as safe as possible, and you're just reflecting acceptance. And so by taking them out of exactly where they are and referring to something else, you're wanting them to go somewhere where they are not, and there can be an inference that where they are, there's something wrong with where they are.
That is absolutely correct. And it's the transition. So all difficulty happens in transition, and we're in transition almost all the time.
Yeah.
So to the hope of somebody staying disidentified and they leave that place and then they have to go somewhere else, recall what happened, bring up that is just, it's such a wide opening for conditioning to come in and take the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm glad you bring up the transition thing too, because it's something I've been just watching just a lot in the last, especially year, because my life's a little bit slower now, is really where am I getting from one place to the next?
Mm-hmm.
And it does feel like, I shared a group last night that I made this commitment not to be doing things on adrenaline, which usually is some propelling into, well, I'm really present on adrenaline, but can I be really present just, not feeling on adrenaline? And so, I'm just fascinated with transitions right now.
Yes.
So it's that same thing of, like, okay, here I am, I'm sharing now. It's that movement of going anywhere, really.
Anywhere. Even the transition to, then we go like this on the next thing.
Yeah.
That's a signal for the system to go unconscious.
Yeah.
Go into a review of what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time, I would bet, somebody talks, we go like this, go on to the next thing, person misses whatever period of the next thing because they're in that review process about what just happened. So I kid people about, you're sitting on a cushion. We all, time to go. And then people go unconscious. Come to somewhere down the road, because come to is what we do. But a lot of permission not to be present as you go from place to place. That's the time to kind of go up into your head and, think about, what you're going to do next or whatever it is. And so to really stay in a state of awareness through those times, it's important because, that's a lot. That's a big part of the time that life has access to us. To be giving us information, but again, if it's blocked out because our attention is on this, then we miss all of that. There's that the classic. I don't know a single human who doesn't have the experience of opening your refrigerator. Or go into a room. An example of taking that little transition time to. All right. Oh, I'm 1 minute late. And so on. Very good.
All right. Well, thank you.